And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com, brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace, the all-in-one platform, makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. Well, folks, welcome back. It is another sort of spring cleaning episode of the Eye on College Football podcast. But this is the spring debut for my very good friend and Eye on College Football colleague, Mr. Jerry Hinnon. Jerry, it is good to be back here on the podcast, on the show, as we get ready to rock and roll. I asked Tom this at the last one, and you know, just sort of as a to dive in, I'd like to pitch it to you. What do you think is of value as a college football fan or even as a college football writer during spring practice? Because there's a lot of blog posts, you know, written by us. There's a lot of ink and newspapers dedicated to covering these spring practices. And even I, as somebody who produces that, will argue some of it's not really valuable. So what do you look at, and what are things that you think are valuable during the spring practice session?
I think you have to start with quarterback performance. I think it's very difficult to tell if you're talking, you know, about spring games or spring practices, you know, if quarterback X goes off for a lot of yards, or, you know, the defense is giving up a lot of yards or is looking completely locked down. It's like, well, where do you draw the line between a certain team's defense being good or the offense being bad, or, you know, vice versa? But quarterback performance is one of those things that's a little bit sort of independent of that, where you can say, you know, if they're being accurate on their passes, like in the spring game, you know, if they seem to have a firm command of the offense, you know, you can say, okay, I think there's something actually to be read into that. A quarterback who really struggles during the spring game, you know, probably might have some ground to make up before the season starts. You know, it's just a general sort of, if you're coming out of the spring talking about your, you know, new quarterback, and you're saying, well, he's still got a little bit, you know, of time to grasp the offense, or, you know, he'll develop over the spring, you know, I tend to be less optimistic than if the player's coming out of spring and everybody's saying, oh, he had a great spring. And, you know, you can definitely still file some question marks away from that. Again, getting back to, well, is it that his offense was good or the defense was bad? But, you know, I think that's a much more positive frame of mind. I'm going to be much more confident coming out of spring if, rather than making excuses for a quarterback, we're saying, okay, he had a really solid spring. So that's one thing. I think, in general, maybe the attitude of teams that have been really good the year before. For instance, last year, if you remember, in Texas A&M spring game, the Aggies seemed to be maybe a little too loose. Picked up a lot of, you know, sort of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in their spring game. You know, we're doing some end zone dances, this kind of thing. And, you know, I think it was one of those things, well, you know, those sorts of things don't necessarily on their own make you think, well, you know, we need to write this team off. But I do think it was sort of indicative that maybe the Aggies felt like they had done the really hard part of improving, you know, of getting into the SEC. You know, and it's at the same time, it's like, well, was that really the problem, or was it just that they had nobody who was ready to play on the defensive side of the ball? But in any case, the Aggies ended up, you know, kind of having a little bit of a disappointing season by their previous season standards. So that's another thing I feel like you want to kind of keep an eye on.
I think that with Texas A&M, particularly, I'm glad you mentioned that. I had almost forgotten about all those the way that spring game went. It was almost like the stitching wasn't quite tight enough to consider them seriously for like an SEC West division title yet.
Right.
And that was a very trendy pick coming into last season. You know, is after beating Alabama last year, will Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M, do it again? Can they win an SEC championship? And I guess that you would say that you gleaned from the spring game, you're like, I don't know if this team quite has the backbone, the structure. You know, this is not the way that an SEC champion would necessarily handle their spring game.
Yeah, well, it's just, exactly. It's came across to me, and there again, you know, the Aggies are not the only ones who necessarily, you know, this is more talking about a general trend. You just want to keep an eye out for teams who maybe seem a little bit too satisfied with what they had done the previous
right.
season, particularly if the expectations are running high again this season. And the Aggies sort of fit that bill. You know, I don't know if I would say it showed a lack of backbone as much as just, you know, if you're going to win a major, you know, BCS, or what we used to call BCS quality conference, you have to be a hungry team. Like, you're just not going to be able to do it as a satisfied team. And even, you know, Alabama, with all of their talent, you know, we saw last season, maybe, you know, after the season, some of the players were saying, well, we weren't quite as hungry as we really should have been. And that's not something I think you necessarily would have seen during spring. But that just sort of goes to show you, you know, how badly you have to want it and how everything really has to come together off the field in terms of motivation as well as on it with the talent. It's not just one side of the coin or the other. So like I said, I think that's something to watch during spring.
Well, as we've been doing in these spring practice, spring cleaning episodes, we'll hit some news and notes first, and which will include a little bit of talking about the early signing period. Coaches have suggested it. Other coaches are weighing in. We'll talk about some roster attrition going on in Stillwater. And then we'll move on to the main attraction for today, the first edition of Don't Get Caught Sleeping. It is the Eye on College Football podcast, scanning the entire nation throughout the offseason. We are looking at teams that are particularly intriguing. Maybe sleepers to win their division, maybe sleepers to win their conference. Maybe this is just a sleeper team that you just don't want to play. You think they'll beat some people that they're not quite expected to. And this is a bad example for this particular season. But Jerry, last year when we previewed Auburn, what did we have Auburn at? Like 6 or 7 wins?
I think so. Yeah,
but you believe?
I think we talked about them as maybe like an outside dark horse.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you expressed at least the opinion heading into last season. You know, I think that there will be a definite turnaround. You know, we sort of discussed that back and forth, and so that's what we're looking for. Who is going to be a Auburn or Missouri type team heading into the upcoming 2014 season? But first, the news and notes brought to you by Squarespace.com. Like we said, early signing. We've got David Shaw and Mark Richt have spoken out against it. Mark Richt sort of taking the be careful what you wish for approach. You wrote about it on CBSSports.com. Yep. We also have Dan Mullen, Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly, who seemed to be for the idea. Miami coach Al Golden even believes there should be 3 signing periods.
Wow.
Just in general. Yeah, he thinks that you should be able to have it before you start your senior year of high school, like your senior season, so that August before the senior season starts, once after your senior season ends, after the college football season, which is sort of that December area that where everyone seems to be looking at, and then the third signing period leading up to National Signing Day. So what's your take?
My take is that I'm sort of a little bit in the Mark Richt camp here, where it comes across to me as just coaches who want to be able to have their players signed on the dotted line and don't want to have to worry about them. You know, I don't really see the downside for the players in waiting until February to sign. Like, if you're a player who's completely committed to your school, you know, you don't necessarily have to sign to get people off of your backs. I'm sure some coaches, you know, will maybe, you know, be the jerks who continue texting, continue calling, trying to gauge your interest even after you've tried to make it clear that, you know, you're committed to school X. But I think that stuff isn't as frequent as you might think. I think if you're a player who's completely committed to your school, it's, you know, not the end of the world to just tell the other coaches, look, I'm not interested, I'm going to school X, and, you know, sort of end the calls, you know, whereas, you know, that's, so I don't necessarily see the upside for it for players. You know, maybe I'm underestimating that factor, but I don't really see it as like an end-all be-all sort of thing. Whereas the downside is pretty obvious. You sign in this early signing period, which, you know, the NCAA official Susan Peel, I think, if I'm getting her name right, said that basically they were thinking they were going to do it. They just have to figure out the date. You know, if you're signing, say, in August, and then your coach that you've signed with has a terrible season, gets fired, and suddenly, you know, you're sort of stuck, then that's a pretty obvious drawback. So I think, you know, it really shouldn't be when we're talking about recruiting. I'm not really worried about the interests of the coaches. It's not the coaches who are going to be taken advantage of nearly as often as it's going to be the recruits. So, you know, when we're talking about something in terms of recruiting regulations, the first question I've got is, how is this going to work out for the kids? And I don't really see this as being a positive for the kids. I see this as being a much bigger positive for the coaches who want to sort of have their class officially signed and the hay more in the barn, you know, when they're trying to get through the coaching during the season, you know, more than it really being for the kids. So I'm on that Mark Rick, David Shaw side of the fence. That being said, I think the silent majority of coaches are definitely in favor of this. And unlike the 10-second rule, which caused, you know, the other sort of coach-on-coach media fury over the past couple of months, I'm expecting this one to pass.
This is an issue of principle versus execution, because I definitely understand from the school, not just the coaches, but the schools can save a lot of money if they don't have to be dealing with all these different recruiting periods. And I think it was Dan Mullen who talked about, you play that Saturday after Thanksgiving, or, you know, for Mississippi State, you know, they all have that Thanksgiving night game for the Egg Bowl, mm-hmm. you know, and then they send their coaches out the very next day. And so I think they were talking a little bit about how it would be an opportunity for the coaches with the different signing periods to actually, you know, focus a little bit more on coaching their team. But then we get into the execution, which I think you're right. This is the coaches seeing an opportunity to make life easier on them. And Dan Mullen also came out and said, I think half of our class probably would have signed if there was that early signing period, which means that his life is a lot less stressful when, I don't know, he could be interviewing for other coaching jobs. And this is like, it's like we're freeing up the calendar in December. Well, that's normally when coaches shop.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Mark Rick made the opposite, the exact opposite argument. He said, if you've got, you know, right now, summer is a time when the coaches, and during the season is a time when they want to coach their football teams. The summer is some time when they get a little bit of time to themselves and their families. And if you're saying you've got an early signing period that's either in the middle of the season or just before it, then you're sort of cutting into those times and forcing coaches to do some recruiting when otherwise they wouldn't right now. So, you know, is he right? Is Mullen right? You know, this is one of those things where we don't know. And again, I tend to side with Rick that there's not really a problem here that I can see. The problem is, again, for the coaches who don't want to have decommitments and have to worry about, you know, kids who decide to change their mind. Well, you know, for me, that's not really a problem. If you want a kid to come to your school, well, sorry, you just have to kind of keep recruiting him. I'm with Rick and Shaw on this one.
Real quickly, before we move on to our sleepers, Oklahoma State, we find out Jake Jenkins is gone, as well as Lindell Johnson in the defensive backfield. But Travis Cross is almost gone. Oklahoma State has no centers. there's not a whole lot of news going on right now, but this one was particularly noteworthy as well, first of all, did you pick Oklahoma State as one of your sleepers?
I did not.
Okay. I am annual.
Well, not my Big 12 sleeper.
Right. Okay. I am. We are not hitting on a topic that I'm killing you for late year. All right.
No.
I am annually slow to catch on to Oklahoma State. They've been so, so good here in the last couple of seasons. And every single year, I'm a doubter for one reason or another. Maybe last year it was that loss to West Virginia. I just kind of wanted to stand on the other side of the room like Oklahoma State had cooties.
Yeah.
Am I being slow again when I'm looking at the quarterback situation, I think Josh Stewart is back, or maybe he's going pro. I'm looking at this Oklahoma State team that was, you know, that Bedlam game away from winning the Big 12.
Yeah.
And I just don't have a lot of confidence going into 2014. Am I off on that? Am I already annually right behind the curve on the Cowboys?
I think expecting a Big 12 title is going to be a bit of a stretch. I'm not sure if the personnel losses, as you point out, are major, particularly on defense. You know, that's where the loss of Johnson really hurts. They've already lost Daytwon Lowe, their other starting safety.
And Justin Gilbert.
So the defensive backfield is a place where they really can't afford to lose a whole lot more guys than they just did in the person of Johnson. The center issue may be one, since Bob Wickline is no longer the offensive line coach. That guy's been Gundy's sort of right-hand dude, particularly when it comes to the offensive line for years. He's at Texas now, having joined Charlie Strong. So, you know, hiccups on the offensive line, it may be a little bit more difficult to smooth over. But for me, I don't think Oklahoma State's going to, like, fall off a cliff. Mike Gundy's just too good a coach for that. He's proven time and again. And, in fact, I think it was, you know, Brandon Whedon's first season, I want to say, a few years ago when they had lost a ton of guys and everybody was saying they're going to take this huge step back. I think Phil Steele had them, you know, this was back in the two-division Big 12, and I think he had them fifth or sixth in the Big 12 North, and they ended up winning the thing. So you can't rule out anything when it comes to Mike Gundy, but after these kinds of losses, you know, given the coaching staff turnover, I do wonder if, you know, maybe there is going to be a bit of a step back from that sort of Big 12 contender tier back to the sort of, you know, 8-4 you know, kind of tier. But we'll see. Gundy surprised me before. It won't surprise me if he surprises me again.
Yeah, and I will probably once again be late on having them as a legit team. This is a reminder that today's edition of the Eye on College Football podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. And Jerry.
Yes.
It's incredibly easy to use. And if you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They got over 100 employees that are in this place in New York City called the Care Bear Layer. And
That's awesome.
It has been suggested on this podcast that if you wanted to get together with Squarespace and try and set up a Jer Bear Layer, then you might have an opportunity.
That's an offer that's going to be difficult to turn down.
Yeah, well, we'll have to talk to our good friends at Squarespace. We would encourage, of course, all of our listeners to go to Squarespace. You can start a free trial with no credit card required and start building your own website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code FUN, F-U-N, to get 10% off and show your support for the Eye on College Football podcast. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Eye on College Football podcast. Squarespace, it's everything you need to create an exceptional website. Now, don't get caught sleeping. All right, where do you want to start? I'll let you. I've got all of mine out here. We're doing SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, Pac 12, and two bonus picks.
Oh, should we start at the top with the SEC?
Oh, all right. Yep. Jerry, what do you have? Who are you looking at in the SEC? Sort of almost.
I'm sure our Florida State listeners love that. Excuse me. I'm sure our Florida State listeners love that.
Well, so now you do like the NBA argument. Whenever someone tries to say ACC won last, you just go rings. All right, so
I think we should get into the sleepers, though. Let me tell you, my sleeper here in the SEC, Chip, is Florida. You know, we learned, I think, last year that if looking at Missouri, if you have a complete plague of injuries one year, it doesn't necessarily mean that the next year is going to be as bad as your record the previous year indicated. Missouri went from no bowl, 5-7, terrible season, Gary Pinkel's on the hot seat, to winning the SEC East, being a game of the national championship game. You know, and now I think a lot of people may consider them one of, if not the favorites in the SEC East going into 2014. Well, Florida to me is in a very similar situation. They've got a new offensive coordinator. I'm not completely fired up about the Kurt Roper hire, but just yesterday the Orlando Sentinel reported how Will Muschamp was saying Roper is going to put Jeff Driskel in the shotgun, have him run the ball a lot more often, which I think is absolutely what this offense needs. Driskel is completely well suited to that, much better than Brent Pease's sort of pro-style approach. So I like that. Will Muschamp's going to have a solid defense. He has one every single year. They were great last year until they got worn down because the offense was just such a complete train wreck. The injury situation cannot be worse. I actually really like the Gators. The SEC East is wide open. You know, Georgia's lost Aaron Murray and a lot of guys. Missouri, I think, is sort of due for just a little bit of a regression. South Carolina's lost a lot of key players. I think the Gators can absolutely make some noise in the SEC East.
as the host, I get to cheat a little bit, and I just gave myself two answers. But Florida is absolutely one of mine as well. I think when the defense is that good, when the offense is that bad, when the offensive linemen are blocking people, when you've got absolutely nothing at quarterback, when literally all it will take is like one or two third down conversions a game to be able to drastically change your record, I look at the Kurt Roper change, moving Driscoll into the shotgun, literally just running more plays, I think will just lead to a little bit more success. And seeing what Kurt Roper has done with David Cutcliffe, I feel confident about that. What do you think about Mississippi State? Because Prescott's obviously going to be a player that catches some of these early headlines. Yeah. And Mississippi State was pretty young last year. Great recruiting class. You've got some skill players on the defensive and off – not skill players. You've got skilled players on the defensive and offensive line. The West is tough. And I agree with you, by the way. East is wide open. No idea what to make of Georgia, South Carolina, or Missouri. What do you think Mississippi State's ceiling is, and do you think they could creep up there and knock off one of the West powers?
I'll kind of believe that when I see it. Yeah. Dan Mullen's been sort of bashing his head against that ceiling for a long time now. I do like Dak Prescott. I think Mullen's best shot is definitely going to be with a dual-threat quarterback. It became clear by about mid-season that Tyler Russell's injury was maybe a little bit of a blessing in disguise, since it forced Dak Prescott into that starting role, where I think Mississippi State's offense really functions at its best. But we've been waiting a long time, to see Mississippi State have that sort of breakthrough and beat an LSU, beat an Alabama, beat, Texas A&M, a team like Auburn last year, and it just hasn't happened. I absolutely think they're going to be bowling, and I think at this point Dan Mullen's actually a little underrated because there hasn't been any upward mobility for Mississippi State. People have acted like he's somehow failed in Starkville, which, it's Starkville. Like, this is the single toughest job, certainly in the SEC West and arguably in the entire SEC. And that they've been able to go to, I think three or four straight bowls now is a pretty substantial accomplishment. So I feel like Mullen deserves a little bit more credit. I don't know if he deserves so much credit to think that they're going to be ready, even with Prescott sort of in control of things, be ready to take that next step to, 9 or 10 wins when the SEC West is this tough. It's an absolutely brutal division right now.
We'll have brand new divisions in the Big Ten, the East and the West. Gone are legends and leaders. Hello to Maryland and Rutgers, who will be in the Big East. And that Big Ten East, absolutely brutal. You've got Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State. I don't feel comfortable picking anyone really ever as a sleeper in that division, and particularly with D'Antonio and Urban Meyer right there at the top. Don't feel great about Michigan. My sleeper pick for the Big Ten's over in the West, I'm going with Iowa. What do you think about that, and what's your pick?
I'm not really sold completely on any team that has Greg Davis as its offensive coordinator.
Fair.
I'm still not over that display 2 years ago. Iowa definitely had a very good season last year. They sort of played to the level of their competition. When they were playing better teams, they played very well. When they were playing lesser teams, they sort of tended to play down a little bit. But I absolutely could see them, I think that's probably Wisconsin's biggest challenger, in the West, maybe Nebraska, except Nebraska's in the West, right?
Yeah. Right.
So, Wisconsin, I think, is the clear favorite there, which is why I don't think you can really consider them a sleeper. I think they're better than people maybe realize. They blew out everybody other than Penn State and Ohio State, in the league last year, had the unlucky loss to Arizona State. I think Wisconsin's very good. I think Iowa's going to be fairly decent. But my sleeper pick is Michigan, actually.
All right.
I'm still kind of a Brady Hoke believer. I think the change at the offense coordinating position should do them a world of good. Al Borges, just for whatever reason, was in over his head there last year. I still believe Greg Madison's one of the best defensive coaches in the game. Had a huge impact on that defense a couple of years ago. They, similar to Florida a little bit, kind of lost the plot late in the season when they were, the offense had just turned into a puddle of goo, basically. And then they got run over by Ohio State in the finale. But it's still Greg Madison. Jake Ryan's going to have a complete healthy year there this season, hopefully. They've still got some, you know, real talent on that side of the ball. And then on offense, Devin Gardner, again, should just, you know, be night and day from what he experienced last year with Nussmeier. I think they're going to go a little bit more up-tempo, you know, get rid of some of Al Borges' sort of cautiousness and some of the complications that he built into that offense. I think things are going to be more streamlined. And I think it's, you know, again, going to do that team a world of good. I, you know, think Brady Hoke, despite, you know, these past couple of seasons, is in fact a good coach. You know, we'll see what happens. I think it's sort of come down for him. You know, Borges was sort of looming as possibly, you know, Rich Rodriguez would have succeeded if he'd had a better defensive coordinator than Greg Robinson. I think Brady Hoke would have been successful if he'd had an offensive coordinator who just wasn't flailing the way Al Borges was. And I'm expecting a big step forward for those guys.
Michigan's starting running back will not have 27 yards on 27 carries under Doug Nussmeier's watch.
No.
That's
no.
just not going to be something that happens. I like that. Over in the Big 12, I'll let you go first this time. Who are you? We already said that neither of us are going with Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma's the favorite here, yep. right? And then who's your sleeper?
Well, I don't know if Kansas State's even going to qualify for sleeper status by the time the season rolls around and people realize how much they bring back from that team last year. First of all, it's Bill Snyder. But then, you know, you look on offense and you've got this two-headed quarterback monster in Daniel Sams and Jake Waters. But Tyler Lockett, for my money, is probably going to be the best wide receiver in college football this season. He just could not be covered towards the end of last season, as you know, Michigan, the team I was just talking about, found out in their bowl game. But even on defense, Ryan Mueller is a guy who every time I watched him last season, the eye was just absolutely drawn to him. He kind of had that, in some ways, Kyle Van Noy sort of you know, quality to him where it just seems like he's making a play all the time, or at least Kyle Van Noy in the early part of last season.
Right, right.
You know, maybe not down the stretch, but, you know, Mueller, I think, is, you know, going to be in line for Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year possibilities. And it's Bill Snyder. You know he's going to get the absolute most out of that team. I think they just, you know, had a little bit of a hiccup at the beginning of the season adjusting to the loss of Colin Klein. With that behind them, I think they can absolutely challenge for the Big 12 championship this season.
Man, that's a I like that pick, Jerry. This is a good Kansas State year too.
It is,
because in the Big 12, you're looking up and down and nothing. I mean, Oklahoma is the most solid as far as like the known commodities go. There yeah. are a lot of unknown commodities up and down the Big 12, yeah. And that is a good.
I mean,
point.
Baylor's still going to be Baylor. You know, it's another wide open season in this league. You know, but I definitely think that Baylor, Oklahoma, and this Kansas State team, I think, are just a little bit of a notch above what Texas and Oklahoma State are going to bring to the table.
But Kansas State's D is not scared by Baylor.
No, has not it been, at all.
Has not been ever. I like that a lot. I actually went with Texas, and it's just from the idea that Charlie Strong and Vance Bedford being able to take like both through they did a little bit was recruiting, but for the most part they went to Louisville and they turned Louisville into a very, very good defense with a lot less talent than they have at Texas.
Yes.
And Texas improving on defense will automatically change a ton. And while Texas is never going to be a sleeper, I don't think they're going to contend necessarily for the Big 12 title. I got them maybe as like a 7-2 in conference play.
Yeah,
I think they can beat Oklahoma again.
I think so. Yeah,
you know, that's I don't know. That's maybe one of my more intrigue. When I set out to make this list, I felt like some of these teams, it wasn't necessarily I was enthusiastically beating them the drum for them as a sleeper as much as looking at them through like the side of my eye. Like,
right.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, let's keep an eye on Texas.
Let's do.
All right, what's give me the one bonus one that you were the most excited about?
Bonus pick? I'm going to say Texas A&M.
All right.
I think a lot of people are writing them off after last season. But, you know, they've got an incredible recruiting class coming in. The defense cannot be worse than it was last season. It absolutely will improve in 2014. And, you know, Johnny Manziel, obviously you're not going to be able to replace him, but this is Kevin Sumlin. Like, he has never, ever lacked for a quarterback. And whether it's, you know, hotshot blue chip recruit Kyle Allen or whether it's Kenny Hill or even Matt Jokel, somebody is going to be ready to play quarterback for the Aggies. I don't know who it is. I'm not expecting them to be all that fundamentally different from the way they've been the past couple of seasons offensively. And if the defense can take a step forward, I think they can get right back basically to where they were 2 years ago and really sort of be in the SEC West mix.
Am I going too mainstream with Notre Dame as a sleeper pick?
No, not at all.
Okay, because I think that with all the injuries they suffered, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, a lot of young players had to play early. And like we've said with some of these other teams, that's normally like a key, like with Florida or Missouri in 2012. When some of these players get in there, that can be a good thing. And Brian Kelly at the end of the year was talking like, hey, I wish we could play some of the games we played at the beginning of the season now because we just are a better team. You throw in the addition of Everett Golson. I think Brian Kelly will be there calling plays. I just think that, you know, all of those factors make me look past the loss of offensive and defensive coordinator to think that Notre Dame could very quickly course correct and be right back there as like a 10-win team that you've at least got your eye on in November.
Oh, absolutely. I think Brian Van Gorder is a solid choice as the defensive coordinator. You know, that's a guy who's been around everywhere. His last stop at Auburn wasn't particularly successful, but, you know, clearly something was just rotten to the core in that 2013 Auburn team. And, you know, Brian Kelly's an old defensive hand himself. I think the two of them should work very well together. I'm not worried about Kelly calling plays for the Irish. I think that's a solid pick. The major problem there is the schedule, which is, you know, a Notre Dame schedule. It's absolutely brutal. It's hard for me to see them, you know, running the table the way they did a couple of years ago against the slate that they've got in 2014. But I absolutely agree that that's a team that can surprise people.
All right, let's go over to the ACC. What's your ACC sleeper? Who interests you in the Atlantic Coast Conference?
This is a weird conference in that you've got basically Clemson and Florida State and then a huge morass of teams where, you know, you could say they could go 4-8, you could say they could go 9-3. But I'm really intrigued by Louisville. Bobby Petrino, you know, I'm not going to defend this hire, you know, in off-field terms at all. I think it's mercenary and craven and exactly the wrong sort of message to send about what college athletics is about, blah, 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 blah. I believe all of that. I also believe Bobby Petrino is an incredible offensive mind and one of the best college football coaches in terms of on-field results going. I think Charlie Strong left behind a strong foundation and defensive talent. I think Bobby Petrino can come in, and even without Teddy Bridgewater, he's going to be able to find himself a quarterback. Devontae Parker came back for his senior year, which is huge for that program. I think he is going to have a monster year at Petrino's offense. And I think, you know, in a league that sometimes struggles to generate offense, you know, if you say, well, we're going to be able to put up, you know, 30, 31 points a game under Petrino, I think that could yield a pretty high number of wins. So I think Louisville may be in the mix there.
I absolutely agree with you. I think not only Devontae Parker, but a guy I think will be a sophomore, James Quick.
Yes.
You got Corvin Lamb in the backfield, speedy little dude. I mean, there is so much skill position talent at Louisville that is going to benefit from Petrino coming. Mm-hmm. I had Louisville, again, cheated a little bit. I said Louisville/Syracuse, and I have no idea what the order will be behind Florida State and Clemson. I guess you assume Louisville will probably be third in that division, but sure. I think that Syracuse, when they finally – Drew Allen was the transfer from Oklahoma. They tried him out. It didn't work, and Terrell Hunt ends up taking over and doing using a little bit more up-tempo. He's a very athletic quarterback. He didn't necessarily run all the time, but it was that sort of up-tempo threat of run, the dual threat sort of skill set that Terrell Hunt was able to bring to the offense. Yep. Defense was pretty good. Scott Schaefer, the former defensive coordinator, kept them in line. I mean, I could see Syracuse, they played pretty well in the bowl game and then also down the stretch of the regular season. I think they beat Boston College in their regular season finale to become bowl eligible. I don't know, man. I could see them being a sneaky – seven or eight win team.
I can easily buy that. I think I would still need to see a little bit more from the offense there to really get on the,
yeah.
Well, you know, they're going to be the best ACC team outside of Clemson and Florida State bandwagon, because that's what we're picking here. I don't think anybody really expects any ACC team to usurp either Florida State or Clemson this season. But I think Louisville, you know, will be the best of the rest. And, you know, I'm not sure Syracuse has the offense to make that happen. But I agree the defense is certainly of that caliber. And if they put things together on the other side of the ball, sure. Sure.
Third. Sure. All right. Let's bring things home. We got the Pac-12.
I don't know if USC can be a sleeper. They're USC. But I really like this team. I think, you know, we kind of saw over the last half of the season that Lane Kiffin was just a major part of the problem for this team. He's gone. I think Steve Sarkisian knows what he's doing in terms of the offense. I think the defensive talent is there, as it always is. You know, Kiffin left the cupboard as stocked as it's possible to be. And, you look at how they fared over the last part of the season. You know, between Cody Kessler at quarterback, Nelson Aguilar at wide receiver, and Buck Allen at tailback, there are some extremely solid pieces to build an offensive line around. The offensive line should be one of the best in the Pac-12. I think this team is going to look a lot like Sarkisian's final Washington team on offense, you know, that had Price, you know,
Bishop
at
Sankey.
Quarterback, and Bishop Sankey at running back, thank you, and, you know, Kaysen Williams, you know, all the weapons that they sort of had lined up last season. I think USC's offense is going to look very, very similar, but with a better defense than Sarkisian was ever able to field there in Washington. I think they're going to win the Pac-12 South.
Woo!
Yep.
Wow. I'm so excited about Pac-12 South. Arizona State brings back Taylor Kelly, Jalen Strong. UCLA brings back Brett Hundley, and obviously Miles Jack and 1,000 other fantastic athletes. USC, as you just mentioned, very intriguing. And my sleeper, Arizona, gets 6'3", 208-pound former Trojan quarterback Jesse Scroggins into the mix after he sat out last year for the transfer. I know Kadeem Carey's gone, but I just – there's something about a talented dual-threat quarterback, you know, top 10 quarterback when he was coming out of high school,
yeah,
getting to spend a year waiting to take over Rich Rod's system that just makes me excited.
Yeah.
Rich Rod, in
general, should just make fans excited.
Yeah.
Like, his teams are just a blast to watch, you know, always have been. And again, you know, if he – to me, one of the great what ifs about college football over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years is, you know, Michigan didn't really go all out to bring Jeff Castile with him from West Virginia to Michigan. And the, you know, ultimate fallout from that was that Rodriguez ended up hiring
Greg Robinson.
They had the worst defenses in Michigan history, basically. If he brings Jeff Castile with him, that defense isn't the abomination that it was. And Denard Robinson, you know, has all four seasons under Rich Rod there. Let's just say I think things play out very differently in Ann Arbor than they have over the past few seasons.
Oh, yeah. Brady Hoke's Sugar Bowl team is all Rich Rod guys.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably one of the great what-ifs of the last 5 years. I like that. I rock with that. My thanks once again to Jerry Hinnon. You can follow him on Twitter at Jerry Hinnon. Please remember to subscribe to the Eye on College Football podcast on iTunes. They get posted there first before they even hit the Eye on College Football. So that is your special treat as a subscriber. You can follow me on Twitter at Chip_Patterson. Our thanks once again to Squarespace. Remember, if you go to squarespace.com/CBS Sports, offer code FUN, you get 10% off. No credit card required. For Jerry Hinnon, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.